Greetings and welcome back to the CBMW podcast, your refuge from the sexual revolution and safe space from our culture's insanity. I'm your host, Jonathan Swan, the executive editor of Icon, a journal for biblical anthropology, and I'm joined by the president of CBMW, Danny Burke, and CBMW's executive director, Colin Smothers. Brothers, how are you today?
I was better, but I got over it.
What? You're better, but you got over it.
Yeah.
Can you explain that to those of us who are hard of learning, hard of understanding?
Well, yeah, I can explain that. That's something my dad always said growing up. It means something like, I felt better earlier, but now I don't. So that's what it is.
We're really sorry, Denny.
I'm actually kind of limping in here today with a little bit of a head cold, but I'm okay.
Is it the man flu? Have you confirmed?
The man flu?
The man flu. Yes.
I don't know what the diagnosis is here.
Well, it's the flu, but when a man gets it, he is very sick and complains a lot about it. There's a video about it online. You should check it out. It's hilarious. So I just don't want that to be you, Denny.
Okay. Well, okay. It's probably that since I brought it up.
Yeah.
I hope it's not contagious right online, whatever it is. Through
it's
the
not an online contagion. Those are different. Speaking of online contagions, today we want to discuss an article written by Samuel James. He's a contributor for Icon from time to time. It's called Tyler Robinson and the Violence of Porn. Tyler Robinson, of course, is the identified alleged assassin of Charlie Kirk. And in this article, Samuel makes a connection between Robinson's pornography use and the violence that he portrayed here just in the last couple of weeks. Guys, can you get us up to speed on Samuel's argument in this article?
Yeah, I mean, the basic connection that Samuel's making is that people are trying to keep separate the fact that Tyler Robinson was acting because he was defending a transgender boyfriend. And so they're trying to separate that from the fact that he was involved in online pornography use. And Samuel's making the case that they're actually connected, because once you're into online pornography, you're actually opening up plausibility structures for alternate identities. And so he says that those two things are connected. And the fact that, you know, he was in those communities, and then the fact that he eventually felt like he needed to defend those communities, that's basically the argument that he's making there. Colin could probably put it better than I just did, but that was the long and short of it.
Yeah, one of the words that Samuel doesn't use is gamification, but I think it's a word that applies here. And that is almost like mediating reality through this sort of online footprint and this online identity, such that you completely lose touch with the real, you know, flesh and blood, real relationships, you know, real people, real problems, these kinds of things. And you're so much online, and so much online in these very distorted, very disturbed, really evil environments regarding sexual exploitation and the various iterations that just get further and further down the rabbit hole regarding all manner of perversions. I mean, you think of a perversion, there's an entire community online dedicated to it. And then one further click will get you into, you know, another debased mode. And so if you're literally marinating in that kind of online environment, you know, from your every waking hour, and then you come and you try to relate into the real world, you're going to have some very disturbed personality types. You're going to have some very disconnected identities from what is real, what is true. And I think that, again, that gamification of that comes with being so online with, you know, people talk about it online being terminally online. When you begin to try to experience the real world, you are doing so through a distorted lens and frame.
Yeah. Samuel had talked about it being just such a fake world, right? It's one that introduces you to things that's almost, I think he uses the word hallucinogenic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're seeing such a problem of violence, especially among men. Of course, pornography is mostly used among men. How do you guys think that this age of digital pornography has impacted males across our country, and what are the results that we're seeing nationwide?
Well, obviously, I don't think that everybody who uses online pornography is going to turn into a shooter or an assassin. Mm-hmm. We're just saying that there seems to be, or at least Samuel is making the argument that there seems to be a connection in this case. But there is no question that in the wider culture, this is like a major social pathology in terms of conditioning and changing men, rewiring their brains. It's doing it to women too, but it's especially a problem amongst men. And so what you're ending up with is an entire generation of men who are unprepared to deal with real women. In fact, they're becoming less and less interested in real women. They're just looking at these, you know, these images on the screen that to them are not human beings, but are more like avatars that they're being used for their own sexual gratification. That's not preparing you or training you to think about, you know, relating to a real woman. Much less is it helping you to have a respect for the person that you're looking at in the image. You know, you're dehumanizing them. So we have an entire generation of young men who've been hooked on pornography, and unfortunately, it's having massive societal results. There was a Time magazine cover story that came out several years ago about this by the author was Belinda Luscombe, and she just talked about that it's gotten to the point, pornography use has gotten so pervasive, it's gotten to the point that a lot of young men no longer prefer a real woman anymore, because they've so conditioned themselves by marinating their brains in this pornography. They prefer the screen. They prefer solo sexual experiences with a screen. And it's easier. There's less, the less pushback that you get from an actual relationship with another human being. And so now that you have a proliferation of pornography in the culture, you're actually having younger people having less sex than they used to. Now, we're Christians. We think that fornication is wrong. So we're not, you know, pushing for people having more sex outside of marriage. We're just saying that this is another form of immorality. And you can see that it's pushed into the patterns of this world where people are actually committing less person-to-person immorality, and they're doing it in the privacy of their own homes with their screen. So it's a problem either way, but on this one, it makes it even more less likely that a person is going to end up getting married ever, because they can't deal with a real person. They don't want a real person.
That's one of the quotes from Samuel James's article here in First Things. He quotes German philosopher, I'm going to butcher this name, Byung-Chul Han, in this book, The Agony of Eros. He says, "What is obscene about pornography is not an excess of sex, but the fact that it contains no sex at all." And what he means by that, there's no physical relationship there. And I think this is one of the things that the ironies of our sexualized culture right now is, you know, these images, this access is really ubiquitous. It's everywhere. The vector is the smartphone and anything that hooks up to the internet, which, as Samuel James points out in the article, this is different, a whole different ballgame from, you know, what our grandparents faced in sort of getting a hold of a Playboy magazine or something like that. This is a totally different iteration, and an iteration that includes some extremely violent, I mean, that, you know, I'm not justifying at all Playboy magazine. That was wrong and, you know, contrary to the biblical commands as well. But this new stuff, again, through the development, through the easy access, and through the rank perversions that are happening, it's increasingly more violent. It's increasingly more misogynistic. It's increasingly more untethered from reality. And again, this is what's, I think James is right to connect to, the distortion that is not just, you know, influencing people like this killer, Tyler Robinson, but really young men and even young women across this country being prepared not to live in the real world, but to live in this alternative fantasy world.
Yeah. In fact, Samuel compares, he says, you know, online pornography is to Playboy what fentanyl is to you know, a beer.
Whiskey. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Whiskey. Which I think is an apt description. They both can be used to very destructive ends, but one is much quicker and much more deadlier, you know, quicker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Two things about it that I was thinking about as I read his article was pornography is highly addictive, right? And so are so many of the media sources we access through our screens. But also there's a law of diminishing returns inherent in pornography use that, Colin, as you said, just leads you down so many dark pathways. And one of the things that we face today is how easily accessible all of this is. Guys, what kinds of direction and guidance would you give to parents of children who are maybe reaching adolescence, but maybe also individuals as ways to avoid these kinds of evils?
One of the scary things about this alleged assassin's personal profile is the fact that, from all appearances, he grew up in a conservative household. It's a Mormon household there in Utah, but in terms of the place where he grew up, it was a two-parent home, you know, seemingly loving environment, et cetera. And so you ask the question, well, how does someone like that get to where they are today? And from what it looks like, from the evidence, it's these online communities at a young age that was completely unfiltered access to the very darkest and deepest recesses of the internet you can imagine. And so that comes with a stark warning, I think, to every parent. And that is, no matter what kinds of things you are doing overtly to train and discipline your children, if you are not paying very close attention to their access to the other channels that they're going to be able to encounter through online internet access, whether it's a smartphone, whether it's a friend's computer when they go over to spend the night, whether it's something they're encountering on at school with somebody else's device. Maybe they don't have a device, but, you know, on the playground or in between classes, you cannot be too careful in monitoring and limiting your children's access, because literally that's what the internet is, the blessing and the curse of the internet. You can get anywhere and anything that you type in, and it is very harmful, and children younger and younger are encountering these things, and we're seeing just mass destruction across society.
Yeah, I would be one of those parents who favors just a don't give this to your children.
Right.
Hold out before you give your child, you know, a smartphone with internet access on it. Everybody else is doing it, but it doesn't mean that you have to do it. In fact, I think you may be saving your child's soul if you could keep that away from them. But you don't want them to be developing this online persona and online life. And if they have this access to it all the time in their pocket, you're not going to know what they're doing with it. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to be very, very careful about this. I think there's a ton of warnings about that. I'll say this. It's not just kids. You're asking about how can anybody avoid this? Well, if you're an adult, I mean, we've got devices now. We've got computers. I think we need to remember the words of Jesus. Jesus says, you've heard that it was said, don't commit adultery. But I say to you, whoever looks at a woman to lust after her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. So if your right eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. If your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off. So Jesus's admonition to Christians was, hey, be willing to take radical measures. Mm-hmm. And if you're not willing to take radical measures to maintain sexual holiness, not just at the level of your deeds, but at the level of your thoughts, if you're not willing to do that, well, then guess what? He says it's better for your, you know, a part of your body to be destroyed than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. So if you have to take radical measures to get this out of your life, then do it. Otherwise, you might have to go to hell. Like that's the warning that Jesus issues. You have to take this deadly serious, that you're not going to go down this rabbit hole of online pornography, because it's not the path to salvation. It's a path that leads to judgment ultimately.
And it's also a path to unhappiness, even on this earth, right? And this is one thing that we have to, I think, constantly remind our people, is that God's commands honor him first and foremost, right? They're for his glory, but they're also for our good. And so when Christians speak of avoiding evil, we want to avoid evil because God made us for good and for his glory. But also, in so doing those things, we actually experience goodness and flourishing and a satisfying life. The world puts these things before us as those which will bring us great joy, great lasting pleasure. But as we've been discussing here, pornography especially is addictive, and it has this law of diminishing returns. You just want more and more and more of it, more grotesque versions of it. It ends up destroying you. And so, Denny, to just piggyback off of what you just said, the great Puritan John Owen, I think reflecting on Romans 8:13, said, "Be killing sin, or it will be killing you." And that's a great reminder for all of us today with regard to this issue. Do you guys have any final thoughts before we close up shop today?
I was just going to say, you know, what do we do with this as parents? It's one thing with our kids. What do we do with this in our own lives? I would say, you know, Christians ought to be out there advocating for at least extreme limitations, if not just outright banning of this, these obscene things that are, that people are accessing and is just warping their minds. And so I'm all for obscenity laws. I don't think that's imposing some kind of like, you know, extraterrestrial law or something. I think that that is what is good for our neighbors. I think that's good for our neighbors' children. So I would be all for, you know, any way that society can help to curb this really epidemic of pornography that is affecting our young people.
Yeah, the law is a teacher, and I would love it if our laws actually reflected the goodness and the sanctity of marriage. And one of those ways that you can reflect that is by banning all of these obscenities that are encouraging immorality outside of marriage and that are actually portraying, you know, actual people engaging in immorality. So, you know, it would be best for our whole culture, for all of us, if this stuff were illegal. And whatever we can do to limit it, curb it, I think we ought to press our democratic privileges for those ends.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, brothers. Until next time, visit cbmw.org to find more biblical resources on the family, gender, and sexuality.